And it's KVCR Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming once again Al Petrelli, music director for and lead guitarist with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They'll be in the region once again at the end of November. Now, if you don't know Trans-Siberian Orchestra or haven't heard any of my past conversations with Al, it doesn't necessarily always start off with TSO.
I just want to let you know that I'm currently sitting at the bus stop. My daughters will be joining us in about a half an hour, so I just didn't want to have to break.
That's cool. I think last time we spoke, that was close to the same situation, and it was actually kind of a sweet moment, and I totally left it in, and it went on the air with you saying, "Hang on, Dave. Hello, sweetheart. Hang on, Dave." And then, so it was great.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things that, like, when I'm home, I'd walk through fire just to greet her off the bus, because then I miss it for a couple months,
Oh, yeah.
So, I appreciate you being so considerate and kind and saying that. I really appreciate it.
No, it's really a great moment. I think that's one of the things we spoke about before, is that that's just one of the wonderful advantages. I mean, you do this thing for a couple of months, this thing, TSO. You do this for a few months, and then, well, it's not like you have the rest of the year off, but you've got more time than so many other fathers are blessed to have with their children, so that's just really wonderful.
Well, it is. I mean, I get to work on this all year long. Like, we've mentioned in past conversations, you and I, we get back to work by the second week of January, but at the same time, I'm home, I'm in my house, And, 40 years ago, when I first started doing this at a high level, it was just, I'd leave town, a year, 2 years, whatever it was, tours with tours, and you go from one tour to another tour in the recording studio all night, and it was a fantastic time of my life. But my three older children, I miss, a lot of birthdays, a lot of baseball games, a lot of those moments. But what do? You're out working, you're trying to build a career. And now that I'm a grandfather, it's a completely different kind of vantage point, where it's like, I'm very fortunate to have worked my whole life to help get this thing to where it is. And now the schedule's a little bit looser, and I'm okay with it. I'm really enjoying everything.
Oh, that's phenomenal. This year, it's The Ghost of Christmas Eve as the main story, but this is really cool, and we've touched on it lightly in the past, and we'll hopefully delve a little bit deeper. This is also the 25th anniversary of Beethoven's Last Night, and so some attention will be spent there as well. I'm going to go into it almost knowing the answer. I know by now some very natural questions are answered with, "Dude, I won't know until we get to Omaha, okay?"
Yeah.
But given that it is the 25th anniversary, I know that music from Beethoven's Last Night will certainly be a part of the playlist, but do you know how it'll be presented? I would guess starting with Ghost of Christmas Eve in its entirety, and then it's the greatest hits kind of thing later. Do you even know that?
No, 100%.
Oh.
Any musical questions, I'll always answer for you. It's when you ask me about the specifics on production, where I'm like, "Dude, I won't know until I get there." But we've been working, especially this year, really, really, really harder than in years past. And the impetus of such is because we finished the tour last year was fantastic, The audience response to the story, I think we just hit 21 million tickets sold, give or take.
Oh, my God.
And I started thinking, you know, there's that portion of the audience, and you've heard me say this before, I consider them affectionately our repeat offenders.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, my managers and I and some of the department heads, we were having our conversations, you know, starting mid-January, and I said, is it crazy to think that we should make everything different this year? Mm-hmm. And now we're thinking the same thing. So my part of it is that when the curtain goes up and the downbeat of the first song hits, I want especially the repeat offenders who've been with us for decades now to look at the stage and go, what is this? Where'd everybody go?
Wow.
So from the jump, I want people to kind of be put back on the heels saying, okay, I don't recognize anything of this. So obviously they'll know, okay, there's Al, there's Jane, there's so-and-so. They recognize the music. But I wanted to change it. Like, I even changed the rehearsal rooms, how that's being set up, because I wanted everything brand new this year. You know, and the first time is they're not going to know the difference anyway, but it's going to be that extra bit of energy that we possess that will transfer to the audience, knowing that, wow, these guys rebuilt the entirety of the look, the production, and everything. Now, in answer to your question, the Beethoven, we're going to start off with The Ghost of Christmas Eve, which has become like a tradition with a lot of families.
Oh, yes.
Fantastic body of work. Again, visually, it'll be different. Some of the arrangements will be kind of like a little different to kind of fit into what we're doing this year. Then there'll be the second half of the show. And we are doing a five-song mini set as a tribute to Beethoven's Last Night, kind of tipping our hat to Paul O'Neill's incredible arrangers of the great composer's work. And that's something we've never done on a winter tour, ever. I mean, we've played songs from that collection, but never as a small set.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like Requiem, that's one that we will always get because it's, I suppose, it's probably the most well-known, the fifth of Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
So musically, you do know what's ahead of you. You are working on ahead of time and working at looking at new arrangements, but it's just whether or not there's eight giant snow globes instead of one. That's where you don't know about that stuff until.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I spent a lot of time with our lighting designer, Brian Hartley, this past year.
Mm.
We got the opportunity to spend some time in South America doing some work with the band Sabotage, and also some of the European festivals. And Brian and I, you know, we'd sit in the hotel bar, you know, on off nights or like the airport lounge, and he'd ask me, hey, you know, Al, what do you think of this? I'm like, ooh, what do you think of this? And then our managers, Adam and Kenny, were with us, and it's just like we had the opportunity to just sit down and put pencil to paper and say, what if we move this here and move that there? And it opened up, okay, that's 10 new things that we could do because of that one chess move, if you will.
Oh, wow.
And it's just been such a creative, fun process this year, and I'm really excited to implement it. And again, the repeat offenders, you know, every time I address the audience and I say, how many of you guys are here for the first time? And I get a pretty good response.
Yeah.
And then I say, where's all my repeat offenders? And I always get put back on my heels. You know, I think we owe it to them. I think we owe it to Paul O'Neill and his legacy and also to us as artists to, like, really let's push this even further than we've ever pushed before.
Oh, phenomenal. And that's something that I've really grown to count on, and I tell anybody about it, even though it's sometimes it's a different album that's the main portion of the tour, but even if it was The Ghost of Christmas Eve every single year, I would still want to go every year because it is different and it is bigger. And so that's just something phenomenal about TSO. Now, at the TSO website, that's trans-siberian.com, The Ghost of Christmas Eve is listed with the compilation albums. And now, while it does have songs from Christmas Eve and other stories, as well as The Christmas Attic, there were original tunes as well. The thing is, when you click on it, it goes to a link for the DVD for the made-for-TV movie. But then in the store, you can purchase the CD of The Ghost of Christmas Eve. I think that may be the same one that I have, which is just the songs. It's not the narrated version. Is there one out there by chance that has that kind of an audiobook only for something so incredibly visual?
You know what? That's a fantastic question, and I apologize for not having the answer. I will speak with management later. I don't know. If it were in existence, it would certainly be available or attention brought to it on the website.
Okay. When you're looking for a narrator, I'll give you my contact information. But anyway.
Well, I appreciate it greatly.
No, I'm here for you. Okay, so now we brought up Paul O'Neill, of course, and we cannot ever really talk about Trans-Siberian Orchestra without Paul's name coming up. And the thing is, though, with Paul providing safely 99.8% of the lyrics, but the music, please talk about who Robert Kinkle is. And this would go back to Sabotage and then TSO.
Well, Bob Kinkle was involved with Paul long before TSO. They were writing partners. It was, I think, Paul and John Oliva, who was one of the founding brothers. He and his brother Chris Oliva of the band Sabotage and Bob Kinkle were really working on these Broadway shows and soundtracks and scripts. Yeah, so they had a wonderful, wonderful musical relationship. You know, Bob is an incredibly accomplished and talented keyboard player and composer. And he just became Paul's kind of like right hand musically, as was John Oliva. And I got involved with them on the Sabotage Dead Winter Dead record.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, Paul was kind of at his wit's end because he was looking for a specific, I'm going to say guitar player in my case, but a specific underscorer, if you will, to serve the song, as opposed to coming in and being like a shredmeister.
Right.
You know, Paul needed something different. You know, he was writing his West Side Story, or he was writing his Jesus Christ Superstar. You know, very important story in the Dead Winter Dead record. And I came in and, you know, that's my background. So we immediately developed a fantastic relationship. And from that album was the song Christmas Eve, Sarajevo 1224.
Yes.
You know, that hit the radio in 95, you know, under the heading Sabotage. And it exploded, as you know, at radio.
Oh, yeah.
So not too long after that, you know, the dust settled and Paul goes, well, I want to capitalize on this and I want to write an entire record around that one song. Okay. Fantastic. Count me in. So he goes, you know, would you come to, you know, the writing apartment and come join us at the, literally at the kitchen table?
Yeah.
And it was Bob Kinkle, myself, John Oliva, and Paul O'Neill. And on the table would be a pair of, you know, electric pianos, a couple acoustic guitars in reach. And Paul would say, okay, I got this going on in this particular portion of the story. I need something here.
Mm.
And Bob would say, how about this? And sometimes, like, oh, that's perfect. Okay, and that's where the song would go. Or he goes, Al, what do you got for this part? He goes, I need a left turn here. I'm like, all right, how about this? He goes, love that. And he would basically just take input from all of us. Sometimes he had the riff in his head. But other times he's like, what would you guys do here? Because he knew, like, we all had completely different backgrounds.
Right.
You know? And it wasn't going to be, okay, here's rock riff number one, blues riff number two. No, no, no. This could be Rachmaninoff-esque theme or Shostakovich piece, or it could be, you know, a Van Halen guitar riff, whatever it's going to be. You know, and he sat there and corralled it all together. And he had the story in his head. He kind of knew how he wanted the soundtrack. And sometimes John Oliver or Bob or myself would come up with something that we would just be noodling about. He's like, what's that? I'm like, I have no idea. And he literally, with a cassette recorder on the kitchen table, and he would just collect these ideas and put them together in his head. And that's how it would be. I mean, it was a fascinating process to not only watch, but also obviously to be part of.
So it's kind of a group thing, everybody with the input, but then he would kind of go away off to his writer's hamlet somewhere and then come back with something more fleshed out. Okay.
Exactly. That's... It was an amazing process, dude.
Back now with KVCR, I'm David Fleming. Trans-Siberian Orchestra is back in the region at the end of November, bringing us to the Ghosts of Christmas Eve with a few changes made to this year's show. We'll also have attention paid to Beethoven's Last Night. It's the 25th anniversary of that album. I'm speaking with Al Petrelli, music director for and lead guitarist with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. You know, we look at TSO, I mean, these days, it's presenting certain albums with other favorites thrown in, but when these albums were initially coming together, I really wanted to hear about that, whether Paul brought in a skeleton of an idea or an acoustic, and then you come in with, okay, here's something for the lead, unless Chris jumped in for that. Or did Paul just often show up with everything written out and then presented to you on paper, since you do read music?
Yeah. Listen, it was all of the above. He would come in, he put the faders up, and Bob Kinkle had kind of sketched out, like, I think it was Mozart's 24th Symphony, you know, at the piano part.
Yeah.
And he goes, all right, I need a lot of guitars on this. And I'm like, okay, this isn't, you know, like Freebird, dude. There's a lot going on in here. You know, no disrespect to Freebird, like one of the masterpieces of all time, but the harmonic movement and the sense of, you know, the melodic structure and mathematic relationship to the harmony and all this is like, you got a score? He's like, you can read? And I'm like, yeah, you know, pretty good. And he put the score in front of me. When I started playing, it was the score was in a different key than what was recorded. And I sight transposed it on the fly for him.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
And he looked at me and he goes, pretty good for a guitar player. And I'm like, well, I had, you know, a very important person in my life tell me that I better be able to outread everybody, just in case. That was the thing where he would come in and he's like, okay, I got the whole thing scored. Read this down for me. All right, you got it. Or he goes, I have an idea. And he would sing a riff in his head. He's like, let's have some fun tonight. Let's build an entire piece around this. Like,
oh, dude, totally cool.
Awesome. Or him and Oliva would have something. There was no real, you never knew what door you were going to walk through, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was like door number one, door number two, door number three. Which one? Don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what made it exciting. Every time I'd go to work, every night of the week, you know, the session started at 5 or 6 p.m. and we didn't quit until like 1 or 2 in the morning. You never knew what was going to come out of it that night.
Oh, sweet. It makes so much sense with you talking about Bob Kinkle and him and Paul having the Broadway background. Because that just, you know, we think of these, oh, I don't want to say anthemic rock, although that's not far from it, but the concept album, the Hall of the Mountain King, and then after that, when you came into Savatage with Dead Witch, you know, so that type of thing seems more apparent with a Broadway background, in my mind, anyway.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I mean, Paul's love for Andrew Lloyd Webber and Jim Steinman, you know?
Yeah. Oh, Jim Steinman, there's anthemic rock right there.
Oh, my God, you know, stories and just that kind of writing and presentation. Yeah. And we're all kind of the same age, you know? So AM radio, you know, in the 60s was a lot of show tunes.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, from South Pacific, from The Sound of Music, from Jesus Christ Superstar. I mean, my favorite being West Side Story.
Oh, yes.
You know, and those films would be played in our homes. And, you know, my dad had the albums, the double albums.
Yep.
You know, and my sister and I would dance. So, like, there ain't nothing like a dame from South Pacific. You know, that's what we knew, along with the Beatles. And then what became, you know, the advent of FM radio with Led Zeppelin and Jethro Tull's Aqualung and these monstrous riffs that were coming off of these guitars. That's how Paul grew up.
Oh, a great time for that. Just what a great time to be alive for an artistic creator. Now, something about The Ghost of Christmas Eve, some know it as the soundtrack to a really cool made-for-TV movie, and some of it know it as really just another cool rockin' Christmas album. Now, the first several songs on the album really have nothing to do with the storyline as much as they're there to get the feel of the holiday season and just pump us up and get us in the mood. But now, along those lines, one of the places the album, how it differs from a true soundtrack, on the album, there's a really cool anthemic, there it is, this anthemic rock kind of thing called Christmas Dreams. Mm-hmm. But at this point in the movie, we have Hark the Herald Angels Sing with Jewel.
Yeah. Yep.
So please remind us how Jewel came into the picture. It's not like she was opening for Savatage at the Wacken Festival or anything like that.
No. Well, you got to put it back in the year that we started filming it. I'm going to say we did it in 98, and Jewel was atop the charts and was also an artist on the Atlantic Records label, as was Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Oh,
and Paul O'Neill was lifelong friends with the president of Atlantic at the time, Jason Flom. So, you know, we had two records that probably sold. It was Christmas Eve and Other Stories and the Christmas Attic. I'm going to say probably sold 5 or 6 million copies before we ever did a show. Very good success at the time, especially that was the beginning of when people really weren't buying records anymore.
Yeah.
You know, early starting. And I guess Paul, his managers, probably Jason Flom, were having chit-chats about the filming of this thing. And, you know, Jewel was, you know, one of the big players on Jason's roster. And Paul's a big fan of hers, and she's a sweetheart and a great singer. Just made sense. Like, remember the, when we were kids, you know, at the variety shows?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, pretty much the weather
not
is...
Not too different. Yeah. Like, you had Michael Crawford. You know, you got Jewel.
There is, yeah, Michael Crawford, you know,
Ozzie Davis. And then you got a children's choir singing. And as you move forward into it, it's just like, well, we're not touring with a children's choir, I promise
right.
you. Not going to happen.
That's why I was laughing, exactly.
Yeah. And then, you know, certain changes, you know, Jewel's available, not available, don't know. You know, she's got her own thing going on. Mm. Right, so, you know, let's add a couple of other people's favorite songs into this. And Paul was very clever, you know, writing the narration and the poetry to accommodate the song and the story. And I liked that there was one or two interchangeable pieces in that story. Dynamically, how it worked for the story. It gives another one of the singers a chance to cut loose. You know, the band kind of yes. has a great vibe on that track in particular, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Just another night in New York City. Snow comes down, looks real pretty. Don't know how, but suddenly there you are with Jelly Roll Morton playing for the bar. Inside here, lights are low, but each song has its own glow. As he floats them through that smoky air, we just can't believe he's really there. How old is he? Cannot say, but claims he taught Cab Calloway. And on this night, I somehow believe him. Knows every song the Christmas got, even ones my brain has dropped. Just him and that old fir tree, all lit up this night, electric blue.
What I'm doing a lot here is I was paying a lot of attention to how the album differs from the true movie soundtrack. One of the things that's on both here, we have a medley of sorts, but it's also an original work, Good King Joy, is what it's called. Basically, on the surface, a variation of Joy to the World and Good King Wenceslas, but there's right. this really cool, soulful bit in the middle of it all.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really storyline as it is just a rockin' way of telling a Christmas story, the story
well,
of
again,
Christ's birth.
Yeah, dude, listen, you're hitting it right on the head as usual. And I'll always go back to, you know, Paul, you never know what left turn or right turn he was going to make in the middle of the song. Here we are, like you had said, you know, Hark the Herald, right? And then it goes into this Dr. John-esque piano boogie part on the bottom. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's amazing. I remember there's a song on The Lost Christmas Eve called Christmas Nights in Blue.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay? Yeah.
Right? And I remember I was sitting at the piano 30 years ago, 25 years ago, whatever it was, and I was definitely in my Leon Russell, Dr. John, Chuck LaVelle head, and just kind of playing like this kind of like minor bluesy thing. And Paul looked at me and he goes, what is that? And I'm like, nothing, dude, just something I've been messing with. And he goes, just make me a recording of that, like a verse, chorus, and put it on cassette. Okay. Next thing I know, we're in doing the record. He's like, remember this thing you played for me? He goes, I wrote all the lyrics to it. And I'm like, you're putting that in the middle of this? I'm like, dude, I love you. You're awesome. You know? So that's why it's been so much fun all these years, because you never know.
And was that when he brought it back to you, saying, okay, there's lyrics now, was that the first time that you'd heard it again after his transformation?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I forgot about it.
Oh, how cool.
I completely forgot about it.
Wow.
I mean, because, you know, at the time, you know, okay, the band is building momentum, we're touring, we're doing this, we're doing that. You know, I didn't remember. It's like, okay, cool. And then he pulls it out and he goes, all right, it's called Christmas Nights of Blue, and it's going to be about, like, Cab Calloway in some bar in the West Village.
Sweet. Oh, that's
okay,
totally
boss. Cool. And, random side note, at the end of it, I was whistling as I was playing the original piano demo.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like kind of whistling along a little blues figure. And we ended up hiring a young lady who was Levon Helm's daughter.
Oh, wow.
She was a professional session player, but she was a whistler. And, yeah, it was Levon's daughter, which my love affair with the band in The Last Waltz, that was a whole nother sidebar to it.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Oh.
The thing about Paul, the evolution live was a fun thing to watch because he had written the records, I don't think he ever gave any attention to performing it live. So the record was recorded how the record was, And he always would tell me, he goes, listen, if ever it comes to live, we'll worry about it then. Well, worry about it then came time, like,
pretty
quick.
In
99. And there's a song on Chris's Even Other Stories called The Prince of Peace.
Yes, yes.
Right? Which is just a beautiful vocal by a young lady, Daniela. I can't remember her last name, I apologize, but she was one of the main singers in Cats. A beautiful little kind of bouncy, light-hearted version. And that song came up in rehearsal, and he's like, what are we going to do here? And at the time, we had a fantastic R&B singer named Daryl Pettiford.
Yes.
And I remember sitting at the piano with Daryl and Paul O'Neill, and I started playing, you know, a version of Georgia by Ray Charles.
Oh, cool.
But using the changes that would have been in The Prince of Peace. And Daryl just started kind of singing it. And Paul looked, he goes, that's it. And that became like one of the highlights of the show. Daryl's voice filling these venues in a very Ray Charles-esque manner. Same lyric, just a different approach because it worked better dynamically in the show.
For this edition of KVC Arts, it's been music from Trans-Siberian Orchestra and conversation with music director and lead guitarist Al Petrelli. Trans-Siberian Orchestra is back in the region near the end of November. More at trans-siberian.com. Al Petrelli joins me on the next KVC Arts as well. More on TSO and a bit of Savatage as well. It's been a while for them. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Al Petrelli, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Duloc, Sandy Hodela, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Paige Chivers, and Shireen Awad. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and most past shows are kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, though on this edition of the program, it's been TSO all the way. Still, thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.